Nurse Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nurse Netter, just talking to teachers.
Okay, so hello, Jan, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Phil. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. Right, if you could just do, as we always do at the start of the podcast, if you can just do a quick introduction to yourself, tell us a little bit about your journey to this point.
Okay, my name is Janice Allen. I'm a head teacher in Rochdale. It's my sixth year of headship, and my school is a very large, multicultural, diverse school in an area of high deprivation.
Thank you. So the reason for the discussion tonight is, as we record this, we're on the Sunday evening going into the second week of lockdown and the second week of schools being, we've got to say open because, you know, you as well as me, Jan, will be in school. But obviously most of the lessons now are taking place online. So we're going to talk to a little bit more about online learning and how you and your school have been kind of pioneers of this approach long before it became quite as necessary as maybe it is now. So if you could just set us off a little bit about telling us about how you came about the model that you've used, why, and obviously it's easy now with hindsight to say why, but why you introduced that model and a little bit about how it worked.
Okay, so back in June, July, we were looking at what the return to school would be like, and we were thinking about how we were going to be able to make sure that our children learnt. How could we maximise the learning opportunities for pupils? And in Rochdale at that time, we were still very high up in terms of infection rates and positive cases. I think Rochdale all the way through had been quite high. And we were looking at the situation and seeing that in the Northwest cases were rising, even though they might actually be declining elsewhere. And we were left with this sense that what's going to happen in the autumn? Everyone was talking about a second wave and everybody was talking about schools perhaps having to close and what it might be like. And we decided that we would be prepared. So the building of our school, we've got a very large open space in the centre of the school and classrooms are around it. So all the guidance that was coming out about perhaps keeping children in one area, having staggered dinner times, we just couldn't do in our school. And it's not for a want of trying. We did look at it over and over again. So we also knew that we wanted our pupils to be prepared for if they had to learn from home. And that if they were at home, they were going to actually get the same curriculum as what they would be getting in the classroom. And we came up with a model which we call the 60-40 model, which was 3 days of in school and 2 days of online learning. And we looked at the timetable and we identified the days which we wanted children to be in school, and we identified the days where they could actually learn from home. So we tended to at key stage three, where there were practical lessons, try and keep them in school on that day. And sometimes for other lessons, they would be at home. So we thought it through really carefully. And obviously this was something quite different. And I spoke to people outside of my school. So I was grateful to David Weston from Teacher Development Trust, who was a sounding board, Harry Fletcher Ward, who was brilliant in terms of helping us with the online design principles, and also as well with Professor Rob Coe and Professor Stuart Kime at Evidence-Based Education, who we work with in terms of implementing the What Makes Great Teaching toolkit. And I spoke to them about my idea, and they didn't dismiss it out of hand. They didn't say that's a really stupid idea. They started saying, well, you know, I can see the rationale, and what will you do and how will you make it work? So we decided in the end of June, beginning of July, that we were going to go for this 60-40 model. And then the job really began of actually working with the staff to make sure that they were able to implement our vision and be alongside us, and to make sure that when the children came back in September, we were able to give them the best education that they probably could receive.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I mean, it just how sort of proactive you've been in terms of obviously looking at your school's design, but also in kind of weighing up what the situation was going to look like once the return to school did come. So you talked a lot there about some people who are involved in kind of the evidence and research based movement, and perhaps something that you used might well have been around the implementation guide and things like that. So just tell us a little bit more about, you said you discussed with David Weston, Harry Fletcher Ward, Rob Coe, for example, and didn't dismiss it. So what kind of discussions did you have with them, and how did you go about implementing the plan?
So the EEF had released their rapid review into remote learning. I think it must have been June. And we started looking at that. And there's not much evidence at that point about what works in terms of remote education. And I think that's a really important thing to say, because I know I can see lots of people are jumping on that now in terms of what works. But at the time, I think then it was produced, there wasn't much evidence of, you know, what we should or shouldn't be doing. So we had to take that as a guide, and we had to look at what we knew worked in terms of teaching and learning. And we decided, and this will be something perhaps many of your listeners might not agree with, we decided that we wanted live learning immediately with the teacher on camera via Google Classroom, via Google Meets for every single lesson. And that was because we were going for a model that other people weren't doing, and we needed to demonstrate that what we were offering our children was a full curriculum, albeit just two of those days the pupils were at home doing the learning. And so we made some decisions based around the principles of teaching and learning. We made some decisions about cognitive load, making sure that when teachers and subject leaders were working on the delivery, that they thought about cognitive load. And we were able to draw on our experiences over the past couple of years for that. We thought about engagement, motivation and expectations. We thought about how we were going to make sure that the children were online and what we would do if a child wasn't online for a lesson. And we also as well went out to the subject leads and the teachers and said, you have a think about what are the best areas of your curriculum that can be taught online. So there may be aspects of your curriculum which may not be suited to online, but have a think about it and decide which ones you think you can reasonably deliver over a period of time at home. And I think that was really important, because it gave the professionalism and the onus over to the teachers and to the subject leaders to look at their curriculum, which we're in a strong position because we've been working on our curriculum for the past 5 years. But it gave them the opportunity to look at their curriculum and identify what they thought would work online and to put that forward to September. And so the teams then spent quite a bit of time working together in July and identifying the best pedagogical methods to teach that online. And obviously it was a chance because, yes, we had the EEF, Rapid Review into Remote Learning, but we were also taking a chance. And we had to think about the fact that when we came to evaluate our practice, we were evaluating things that there's not much evidence for. And so we needed to rely on the people who might know it best, which would be the teachers and the subject leads. And that we decided very early on that what would happen in terms of assessing the quality of the teaching and learning online would come from the teams themselves, in line with the EEF rapid review and in line with our lesson principles.
Fantastic. And that was kind of going to be my next question about bringing your team with you, which you've discussed there in terms of your teaching team. But I suppose at that stage, when you had a 60-40 model, it would have thrown up challenges around attendance, for example. You mentioned there what to do if students weren't online, and things around safeguarding as well. So just be able to share with listeners a little bit more about the preparations that you made for maybe the non-teaching pastoral aspects of school.
So we asked all the non-teaching staff to be part of, in those initial first 2 weeks, of making sure that they would be available to be able to contact children who weren't online. So, for example, teaching assistants, they would be able to work with and be in contact with the children they supported. And our heads of year, and we do have non-teaching heads of year as well. So that was really helpful in the fact that if a child wasn't logged on at 8:30 in the morning, then a message went to the head of year and the head of year would phone up. And then the head of year would then, if a child was, say, logged on at 8:30 in the morning, but they weren't logged on at 10:10, again, a message would go out, would be flagged up, it would go to the head of year, and the head of year would phone home. And the initial first two days was really quite scary, because it was about 85% attendance, and we were thinking, oh, what have we done? But we persevered with it, and the heads of year got into a routine of making sure they knew which children were likely to be, say, late logging on, and making sure the phone calls to them went straight away. But in terms of safeguarding, that's a really important question that you answer there, because if I'd have ever felt that we weren't safeguarding the children effectively, I wouldn't have done it. And we're really strong in terms of safeguarding at our school. We've got lots of good practice that we do. And during the lockdown, what we'd actually done was we'd worked at our children of whom we had concerns about would receive a phone call once or twice a day, and contact was made with them there. But also children every child in school got a phone call every week during the lockdown from March up until July. And so what we did in the July as well, we also brought in those children who we thought might struggle a little bit with the online learning. And we brought them in for some small physically distanced groups with the teaching assistants and with the mentors, and also as well with the heads of year. And we worked with them to be able to make sure that they knew what they were doing and to support them in being able to use Google Classroom. And we set aside the first 2 days of school in September to go through with children what the expectations were for Google Classroom. So in answer to your question, we put some really clear attendance procedures in place, making sure that there was actions if a child wasn't available for online learning. And then we also as well made sure that behaviour expectations online were very clear. And of course there was some nervousness, you know, what do you do if a child's messing around online? Well, we made sure that we talked it through with the children and that any incident, just as they would have been in a class, we picked up on as we would do through our normal behavioural procedures.
Brilliant stuff. And then obviously we're still talking, I know listeners will be finding this kind of hard to believe, that you were already doing this well before the current situation, which a lot of schools, that's the reason for kind of doing this show this week and maybe scrambling around trying to sort this out at very, very short notice and, you know, being really successful at doing it. So what were your teachers and parents' reactions in this when you first started in that sort of winter term before Christmas?
I think it helps that with parents, if we take them, I'd really opened myself up to parents in the period March to July. And we've done that through making sure we're a human rights education school. We teach a programme called Speech Truth to Power. And we'd engaged our parents in the Speech Truth to Power programme from March up until July. So they were involved in, say, for example, doing some actions in terms of food poverty. It might be that some of our parents were looking at environmental issues. So we kept that line of communication going through social media. And I did a number of live Instagram and live Facebooks to parents where they were able to ask me questions online, which is always a bit disconcerting, you know, putting yourself in that position. But it really did work. So I took parents with me every step of the way. I communicated with parents every week during the lockdown, not by letter, but by social media, by things going on the website. And I explained to them the situation that we found ourselves in, and parents were on board. And it, because, you know, at that time in the Northwest, I think we were still scared. We had Auntie Burnham, who was suggesting that we should never have come out of lockdown when we did do in the Northwest. And so the rate, we weren't seeing the actual rates falling in the way that perhaps other areas across the country were. So I think they were glad. In terms of teaching staff, again, that approach that I've worked on with the parents and the community, I worked on with teachers as well and did a number of those, you know, used a lot of Zoom videos where people could ask me questions along the way, engaged with the unions every single week. So we had a weekly meeting and just was very honest and transparent in terms of what we were wanting to achieve and being very clear about the fact that, you know, not everybody was doing this. I didn't realise, Phil, that that we were such an outlier. I thought that more schools would be doing it. And so, I suppose at the time, if I'd have known that, perhaps I'd have been a bit more scared about going ahead with it. But I just thought it was the right thing to do for our pupils and for our families, because I just couldn't see how I could bring 1,350 children back into a building and make sure that they actually got the best education that they probably could under those circumstances.
No, absolutely. And there's a few things there that I wanted to pick up on that are maybe slightly off the script of what we're talking about. But, you know, talked about communication there and you're using social media. So just talk us through that a little bit, because that might sound really interesting for, you know, any senior leaders that are particularly listening. You know, live Instagram, live Facebook. How did you get your head around the technology there and how well did that work?
Well, I've got some really good young staff who are much better at it than me, and they would just tell me, right, you're going on a live Instagram at this time, and they would help me get through it. But on a serious note, we'd set up a hashtag Talk Tuesday. So we obviously do a lot of work with the Alliance for Learning in terms of their mental health and wellbeing programme. And we decided that we would communicate every Tuesday with pupils via a live Instagram session. And it's my teacher who leads that, a math teacher called Fosia. She was doing these live Instagrams with pupils where we were checking in on the wellbeing or we could ask questions. And we've continued that all the way through, and we've had a number of guests on the talk Tuesday. Actually, this coming Tuesday, we've got the comedian Gus Khan, who's joining us to talk to pupils about looking after themselves as well. And we'd got into that habit of doing it, and we could see that children were loving the live Instagrams during the first lockdown, because they were able to ask a question or just do a quick shout out to somebody. And it was a measure of faith. You know, we had two or three people who were monitoring the live Instagram. So if, for example, a pupil ever put something on that wasn't appropriate, they were just taken out of the chat straight away. And I think that helped a lot. It helped keep us connected, and it helped parents see what it was that we were doing.
No, definitely. And I'm writing lots of notes here and thinking about something that maybe, you know, I could take forward. I'm certainly sure that listeners will be the same. Right. OK, so the next question would be, as we came into those difficult few weeks before Christmas, and obviously there was a lot of discourse in the press around, you know, schools that had tried to do things slightly differently, which have now become pretty much the norm. What kind of reaction did you have maybe to some of that?
Yeah, that's fine. So we started out, and I always, my intention was always that I would be able to get children back full time when it was appropriate. And the first 2 weeks in September, we said it was a phased induction, and we had three bubbles that I had to send home in those first 2 weeks. And then what happened then, I said, right, we'll give it another 2 weeks, see where we are. And then we'll build up slowly. We'll go to an 8-20 model, and then we'll have everybody back in full time before half term. And what happened was the cases in the community were starting to rise. And I think, you know, the situation that the South East found themselves in before Christmas, with those cases suddenly rising, that was the situation in the Northwest around October, November time. And I was looking at these figures, and on the day I was going to bring more pupils back in, I had to send another bubble home, and it was my fourth bubble that I'd sent home. In retrospect now, obviously that wasn't a lot. It was only four bubbles within sort of 5 weeks. But I said, how can I bring all these children back in when I've just sent another bubble home? And so we decided to persist with it, with a view to perhaps we could bring people back before Christmas. And it was always a flexible thing, you know. There's an absolute, isn't there, in terms of this, of remote learning and children not being in school. There's a discourse that says they're either in or they're out. Well, I think we have to be a bit more nuanced and a bit more flexible. And what I was able to do was to be very flexible to the situation that I found myself in at different times. So during October half term, there was 2 to 3 cases I was dealing with every single day of people who were positive. And during the October half term, I thought, you can see where this is going. There was a sudden change and a sudden increase in terms of the number of cases. And in November, that's where we had our highest number of cases, which was 28 cases within 1 month. And the key bit for that, though, is in total, we've had 50 cases across the school in children. And I've only ever had to send home 15 bubbles. And the reason for that is because on the days, so many of the times, because the children were online learning for 48 hours, I didn't have to, you know, they weren't infectious, they weren't around people. And so that is an aside benefit of the model that we used. Not only that, I've never had to send a year group home because a teacher was positive, and my rates for teachers are very, very low. I've never had to do that because we created the physical space inside the building. We created the physical space. We created the space in terms of well-being. And we created a space whereby we could still run our curriculum in the way that we'd always done and still offer those interventions and those support for those children who needed it most.
Definitely. And the key word there that you mentioned was you're flexible. And I'm just thinking to that Christmas period now, and perhaps, you know, senior leadership teams, you know, I hesitate to say scrambling, but certainly, you know, trying to get together over the Christmas break to kind of work out how to move from, as you put it there, the absolutes of either we are fully open and now potentially we are fully closed. And obviously initially it was only for a week, and then year 11 and then 2 weeks, etc. So I suppose over Christmas time, you must have been seeing this coming. And, you know, even when the Prime Minister was on Andrew Marr, that's only last week, which seems like a lifetime ago. And he was talking about the primary schools being open and secondary still had the plan to come back on the 11th, which is as we record this tomorrow. So over Christmas, you were kind of presumably were able to use that flexibility to think, right, this is how we're going to be able to plan to move forward. So have you now clicked into this 60-40, 80-20 blended learning approach, obviously with key workers and vulnerables still being in school?
Okay, so we were told by the Department for Education via a phone call at the start of December that we could no longer continue doing it. I mean, we've been doing it for 10 weeks by then, and it was working. Attendance figures were high in school and also online. So our online attendance was about 95%. And I just want to say at this point, we'd worked out a brilliant library system whereby children were able to borrow a laptop and then bring it back into school on the day they were in school. And our attendance in school was about 91%, 92%, which was actually quite high considering that Rochdale's figures, I believe, at that time were around 60-odd%. And that's because they felt safe, staff and pupils. But we were told we couldn't continue it. I tried, begged, but no one was having it. So we went into this period thinking, right, well, come on, all the evidence is there. It's going to be... I can't see that we're actually going to be open in the way that they want us to. But if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. And we got quite resigned to that. And then listen to the news over Christmas. I knew that we were in a strong position whereby we could just run with the live learning straight away. And I just want to say, in terms of having the teacher's face there, for me, it's always been about relationships. I think the relationships and positive relationships are the key factor in the school. And we made a decision to have the teacher's face on speaking to the children in terms of delivering the lesson, because it was that relationship, that connectivity that was needed. And we could see from our attendance figures when we were doing that, that actually they were significantly higher than during the first lockdown, when our attendance to lessons was about 20%. So we knew that that worked. So we were able to respond very quickly to the government announcement. We obviously deliver all our lessons via Google Classroom remotely at this moment in time. But I do think it brings implications for the future, because what worked for us was by doing a 60-40 model, and I really do hope that maybe people can consider this approach, sorry, the Department for Education could consider an approach such as this for after February half term up to Easter. By doing that, we had the connectivity with the children. We had the relationships. If the work they were doing was synchronous online with what they were going on within their actual lessons. But the difficulty that I foresee now is going to be fatigue. Fatigue of teachers and fatigue of pupils. Because we're asking pupils and teachers to be at a screen for a considerable amount of time for 5 days a week. And I think that one of the things that we're looking at now is we're actually looking at where in that school day we can build in some breaks for the pupils. So, for example, instead of an hour lesson, we might move to a 50-minute lesson. And also as well, bring in screen break time for teachers. So one of the things that I'll be sharing with my staff tomorrow is the fact that any other meeting that people are holding is unnecessary at this moment in time. Just focus on your teaching. You don't have to be having a line management meeting or a performance development meeting, or if you don't need to have a Zoom call, just don't have it. Because actually what we need to be able to do is think about teacher fatigue in this situation as well, and think about what will happen in a couple of weeks' time when the engagement starts to drop, which I think it will do.
You know, great points there. I mean, in terms of, you know, the whole staff meetings and things like that, obviously you mentioned about, you know, line management meetings and all those kind of things to reduce screen time and fatigue. How do you kind of keep everybody together when you were all so disparate? Because presumably you've got teams on rotors doing key workers and vulnerables. How do you manage to keep everybody together at this time?
Well, actually what's happened, Phil, is I've given my staff a choice and said, you can either be in school with the safety measures that we've got in place, or you can work from home. It's entirely up to you. And the staff have chosen, the majority of staff have chosen to come in and actually deliver their lessons in school. And what we did back in October was we actually, you know, when those cases were rising over October after term, what I did do then was I did say to my staff that there could be no in-person meetings. Any meeting had to be via Zoom. I had to stick to a bubble of sort of two or three people. And I think we managed to keep the rates down and the infection, the cross-infection towards staff down to a minimum of that. And in terms of keeping them connected, we're going to do a big Failinge family fitness thing that we're going to put together, and we've got a big readathon that we're going to do across the whole school. We keep connected through the social media apps that we use, and where there's a need for a meeting, of course, we will have them. But what we're saying is, if you don't need that meeting, don't do it. Think about where we are and think about the fatigue that may come in if you're delivering 5 days a week, a full timetable. So in terms of keeping people connected, I think because we've been able to do it all the way through, and obviously I will have a staff meeting, I've got one tomorrow, where I talk to the staff via Zoom, those things can still take place. But don't think just because something's calendared in, you've got to do it. But that's our approach. It doesn't necessarily work for everybody. And we're in a different position as well, because we're in a position whereby we've been doing it, so we know what we're doing, and we know what's working in terms of delivery of lessons.
No, absolutely. And on that theme, so what tips do you have for school leaders at the moment? And it might be about the remote learning, or it might just be in general.
So I would suggest that actually, you know, lots of people are telling you what works in terms of remote learning. I've seen quite a lot of that already. I think head teachers, you're not doing it. Senior leaders, you're not doing it for the same level in terms of what your staff are. I think there has to be an element of trust that you're putting over to your staff. By all means, have some lesson principles that you would want to see. And as I say, you know, we've got the way that we do it. We have a greet, an entrance activity into the Zoom call. We use cold calling in terms of to answer questions. We use direct instruction, and we always do an exit activity. And that could be the form of a Google form or quiz, or it might be the submitting of a piece of writing via the chat function, or questions via the chat function. So I think that what senior leaders could do, and it's obviously dependent on where their skills are, is work with the teachers to identify which areas of the curriculum can be taught online. Give the teachers a little bit of slack as they're kind of finding things out. Don't assume that you've got to quality assure it yourself, because actually at this point, the teams might be the best people to do it, the teachers who are actually doing it. And what we did for our quality assurance was we asked a teacher to record a lesson, and then they looked at that lesson with the rest of their team and the subject leader in a session and explored and discussed what they thought was effective. Not me, not my senior leadership team, giving it over to those staff. But then I think maybe sometimes I'm a little bit different like that, and it might not work for everybody because people might not be in the same situation as us. So yeah, and don't beat yourself up about it. I asked a question of my staff. The question I posed in June, towards the end of June, is good enough? And actually, in these circumstances, the answer is yes. Because if we are working in a strange times, you can't, well, I don't believe you should be able to strive for perfection anyway. I don't think it's realistic. But actually, accept that what your teams are doing is probably good enough at this moment in time, and give your teams the opportunity to explore it and to develop it themselves. And that requires trust.
Absolutely. And just to finish off, I'm sure that you already get inundated with lots of people wanting to know about your approach, you know, and how you've gone about doing this. So is there a way that people can get in touch with you if they want to find out a little bit more? Obviously not to increase your workload too much at this time, but if you just share maybe, you know, your handle on Twitter, for example, and whether they can get in touch with you at the school.
Yeah, so surprisingly, actually, not a lot of people have been in contact with us. We were contacted by the Education Development Trust, and they are using us as an example of global best practice, which is really nice. But we've not really had the take up in terms of, although we've offered, perhaps, you know, of what we might have thought. And I wrote the blogs very early on for Harry Fletcher Wood to perhaps encourage a discussion. But if people do want to get in contact with us, we're more than happy to share our experiences. People can email me directly. I always give my email address out, alanj@failingepark.com, or they can use my Twitter handle, which I think is @alanjanice1. I'm sure you'll be able to put that in if needs be. And we're more than willing to help, because we've been through this process. We can see when there's likely to be a dip, which is why I've warned about the sort of end of January dip in terms of attendance and engagement that might happen. We know which things probably don't work online, you know, and there's some lessons that may not, that don't necessarily lend themselves to online. So we're in a position now where, say, for example, if it's a practical lesson, what we're going to do is supplement that with some further vocab work, because actually the cost benefit analysis, cost benefit to the teacher is probably not that great. But I'm more than happy, my team are and the staff are, because the teachers at my school and also as well the support staff can wax far more effectively than I can about what works in the classroom. And they're really chuffed with what we've been able to achieve. They have been with us all the way, and I'm sure they'd be willing to kind of talk about things. Simple things like in maths, there's a brilliant program called Desmos, which actually my maths team have found, and it marks the work for children as they're doing it. It's really quite clever, and that's for science as well. But yeah, just get in contact with us. More than happy to help, because one, because we believe in what we did, you know, two, it was a big chance and I probably didn't realise just how much of an outlier I was, first of all, but also as well because I can't see us being able to come back full February up to Easter, and there needs to be a different way to be able to do that, that keeps children safe, staff safe, but also keeps them learning. And I just hope people start to have that, those thought processes.
Definitely. And I said I wouldn't get too much into the day job here, but just to echo what Jan's saying in terms of the advice that she's given to us, the advice that she's given us, some of the stuff that I'm just writing down here further to the advice that we've already had. So if you are interested in this model and you want to see how it's been done, then I'd recommend definitely getting in touch. And I think you're absolutely right in terms of, you know, the coming out of the situation that we're currently in. It isn't going to be a case of, right, schools are closed today, schools are reopened the next day. There's going to have to be some kind of phased return in. And I think this model lends itself really, really well to that. So perhaps if you're listening now, and we're obviously putting this out as soon as we possibly can following the discussion, you know, starting to plan for what it's going to look like post February, maybe Easter time, I would definitely recommend getting in touch. Jan, thanks so much for your time tonight. Really, really appreciate it.
You are more than welcome, and thank you for asking.
Miller's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Miller's Netter, just talking to teachers.